First update, the low volume threshold. So in 2017, if you were below the low volume threshold, you didn't have to participate in MIPS. And that low volume threshold is if you saw less than or equal to 100 Medicare Part B patients, or you got less than $30,000 in Medicare Part B payments. They are increasing the low volume threshold for 2018. And the low volume threshold is now going to be less than or equal to 200 Medicare Part B beneficiaries, or less than or equal to $90,000 in payments. So some people are happy about that and some people are not. Why is that? So if you were below the low volume threshold in 2017, and then you were not going to, or you were above it in 2017, and you were participating in MIPS, and you were happy about that because you were doing well, and now in 2018, they've raised the low volume threshold, and you are not able to participate in MIPS. So you may not be happy about that. Perhaps you were getting a positive update, a positive payment adjustment, and now you have been excluded from the program because they've raised the low volume threshold. So some people are not happy about that. Others that were participants and didn't want to be have now fallen out of participation because they raised the low volume threshold, and they are thrilled. So there's both sides of that coin. What we asked for was we asked for an opportunity for an opt-in. We wanted anyone who wanted to participate to have the opportunity to do that. CMS did not give us what we wanted. They didn't say that we could do that in 2018. They have said that they are going to try to look into ways to make that available in 2019. So there may be an opportunity for an opt-in in 2019, but it's not going to be available in 2018. If you want to know if you have fallen above or below the low volume threshold, there is an easy way to do that. You can go to the CMS website, qpp.cms.gov. You enter your MPI number. It's on the very first page you can see when you get there. You enter your MPI number right there in the MPI number box, and it tells you what your participation status is. So you can find out if they think you are a MIPS participant, if they think you are an AAPM participant, and if you have met or exceeded that low volume threshold. Update number two, virtual groups. Virtual groups is something that was actually statutory. It was written into the law in 2015, and it was supposed to have happened immediately, supposed to have happened for this performance period, but it did not. They've actually gotten it together, and they're going to start virtual groups in 2018. The bad thing is, though, they didn't open up participation, and they didn't give us the rules around virtual groups until October of this year to start virtual group participation in January of 2018. So that's pretty tight time frame to try to get a virtual group together because no one really knew what it was or how to do it. Because there were some rules you had to follow. So you had to be a 10 or less. You had to sign an agreement amongst yourselves. Everyone had to participate. So if you were in a 10 that said we were to be in a virtual group and one of your partners said, I don't want to do that, you can't do that. Everyone, it's all or nothing. Everyone has to participate. You had to agree to participate for the entire performance period. And then you were going to get scored, and you were going to get one score, and it was going to apply to everyone in the virtual group. CMS was not going to have any way to aggregate this data for you, so you could join with a virtual group or join with another practice, perhaps down the street or even across the country. There was no geography or specialty restriction. Anyone could be in a virtual group together, but you have to figure out the way to report this data to CMS because they're not going to aggregate the data for you. So there's a lot of technicalities to figure out. So you had from October to December 31st, so the virtual group window is still open, to get all this together and tell CMS, yes, we're going to do this for 2018. So they are not anticipating many people are going to have this figured out and be ready to do it in 2018. They think there's probably going to be about 14 virtual groups for 2018. Probably going to be more for 2019 because this is something that's going to continue. But it's something to start thinking about if you want to do that. So one of the caveats to virtual groups, and something that we thought was just not the statutory intent of a virtual group, is if you are below the low volume threshold, you can participate in a virtual group, meaning you can be in one if your 10 is in one, but you still can't participate in those positive, or I guess you don't want to participate in the negative payment adjustments, but you can't participate in the positive payment adjustments. So when we were reading the law, we thought virtual groups is a pathway for small practices to participate in MIPS and to do well, because you're trying to get your N up, right? So especially in quality, you really want more people to participate together to increase your N, so you don't have one patient just tank your score. So you can get more people together, and you report as a group to increase, decrease that variability. But if you fall below the low volume threshold, now you lose the ability to benefit from the virtual group participation. So we really gave it to CMS when we figured this out. And we asked them to allow those below the low volume threshold to be in a virtual group and to be able to participate in those payment adjustments, but they did not take our suggestion. So update number three, cost. So in 2017, this year, cost was 0%. So you were not judged on cost at all. And people were pretty happy about that. In 2018, cost is going to be 10% of your MIPS score. In 2019, cost is going to be 30% of your MIPS score. As cost goes down, as cost goes up, another category has to decrease to offset that, because a MIPS score is 100%, and that category is quality. So cost is going to be 10% in 2018, and quality is going to be 50%. Because quality was 60% this year. So cost is going to go up and quality is going to go down. And in 2019, they're going to both be 30%. And that was actually written into the laws. That was a statutorily required 30% in 2019. So cost is actually going to start to count. This is not something you're going to have to report to CMS. It's not going to be an extra reporting burden. They are going to calculate the cost category based on claims data. So it's not an extra thing you have to submit, but it's an extra thing you're going to have to start to look at. This is when we start to talk about QRURs. Everyone here know what a QRUR is? Raise your hand if you know what a QRUR is. More than most. That's good. A quality resource use report is what the value-based payment modifier, how you learned how you were doing on the value-based payment modifier. It's this report you would get from CMS. It was telling you how you were doing based on quality and cost compared to the rest of the country. The two measures of cost, the Medicare spending per beneficiary and total cost of care measures, are what they're going to be calculating cost on. And you can predict how you're going to do in the cost category based on how you were doing on your QRUR, because that is going to be those two measures that they're going to calculate for you for your cost in 2018. Update number four, performance period. So in 2017, it was pick your pace. They wanted to give us a transition into this program. Let's just do one thing. Let's report just a little bit of data for those that hadn't been doing anything. Let's just get used to reporting. You can just do one measure on one patient. Just do something. So it was a very lenient year this year to participate in MIPS. That leniency is starting to go away. So in 2018, quality is going to be an entire year of reporting. So that means starting January 1, that year begins. January 1, by my calculation today, is December 1, right? So that's a month from now. January 1 is a month from now, and quality reporting starts. So for 1 year, you have to do an entire year of quality reporting. Cost is actually going to be calculated for the entire year. Improvement activities and advancing care information are going to be 90 days. So that's a big difference between 2017 and 2018. So an entire year for quality, an entire year for cost, 90 days for improvement activities and advancing care information. The deadlines for reporting, you see the deadline here, 3/31/2019. So that's going to actually be the same for 2018. So to submit for 2017, you have until March of 2018 to submit for 2017. So you'll have until March of 2019 to submit for 2018. So people keep asking, so when are we going to get feedback on how we did in 2017? Well, you're not going to get feedback until they get all the data from 2017. So until they get the data in March, they can't generate feedback for 2017. So I wouldn't start looking for that feedback report to come until sometime after March 31st, 2018. So it's going to be a little frustrating to try to figure out how you're going to, how, what you want to do for a full year of reporting in 2018, because you'll have already started and you're not even going to get feedback from 2017 probably until middle of the year 2018. But you need to start anyway. Quality is going to be a full year in 2018. Update number 5, improvement activities as it pertains to patient-centered medical home. So in 2017, you only needed one member of your 10 to be certified, recognized as a PCMH for the entire 10 to get improvement activities credit. So improvement activities, 15% of your mixed score, only one member of the 10, if you're reporting as a group, needed to have PCMH certification to get improvement activities credit. Now in 2018, 50% of those 10 members, individual members, need recognition, certification, whatever you want to call it, for the 10 to receive that full credit. Recognized, certified is now, they actually clarified in the new rule that, so that means the same thing. The people that wrote it didn't realize that people get confused when you use one word or the other because they can mean different things to different people. They said we mean the same thing when we say these words. And it's still this same list of entities that they are talking about when they say certified and recognized. So you need that kind of recognition from these entities. And 50% of your 10 will need that in order to claim the full credit for improvement activities. Update number 6, bonus points. We actually get some bonus points now. So CMS has recognized that being small is hard. And it is, especially when you're doing a program like this. So if you are in a practice of 15 or fewer, then you get 5 points added to your MIPS final score. So they're going to tally up all of the points across all those 4 categories. You have to have submitted data for at least one of them for them to do this. And then they're going to just give you 5 points to the end of that MIPS final score. So that was going to be quite helpful to some of our small practices. Now, they have said we're only going to, for certain, do this in 2018. And hopefully they will do that going forward, but they have not guaranteed that that's going to extend beyond 2018. The other thing they have done is this complex patient bonus. So when you say my patients are sicker than yours, I should get more points for seeing them, they've actually listened and they've said, okay, well, let's give you some points and some credit for that. And the complex patient bonus is the sum of the average HCC score of your patients plus the proportion of dual eligibles you see times 5, add those together, and that's your complex patient bonus. I will give you an example because that's confusing. So let's say your average HCC score is a 1.5, and then you see, this is, you probably do not see this many, but this made the math easy, okay? Let's say you see 200 dual eligibles and you have 1,000 Medicare patients. So that's a 0.2. You multiply that times 5. That gives you 1. You add that to your average HCC score, so you get 2.5 bonus points added to your MIPS final score. So if you're a small practice, you would get 5 bonus points plus a 2.5 bonus point for complex patients. So that's how that works. So at least CMS is starting to realize that, yes, taking care of complex patients, taking care of dual eligibles is actually quite challenging, and we do actually deserve some extra credit for doing that. Update number 7, the performance threshold. So in 2017, the performance threshold was 3. That's why Pick Your Pace worked. So if you submitted one measure one time, you got 3 points for submitting a measure. And that's why you got to the performance threshold and you weren't going to get a negative payment adjustment. In 2018, that performance threshold is 15 points. 2019, statutorily, it has to be, the performance threshold has to be the mean or median of the previous year's MIPS scores. So they're not going to be just setting a performance threshold anymore. This is the last year where they're just going to set a threshold. Statutorily, it has to be the mean or median of the previous year's MIPS scores starting in 2019. So be thinking about that. So, but this, in 2018, it's going to be 15. Now, remember what I said about the improvement activities category. If you have PCMH recognition, that's 15 points. If 50% of your 10 has PCMH recognition, you get full credit for improvement activities. Improvement activities counts for 15% of your MIPS score. That's 15 points. Guess what? The threshold is 15. And now you have avoided a negative payment adjustment just by having PCMH recognition. Or just doing the improvement activities category, which as family practice physicians is actually pretty easy and a pretty low bar to get over for 2018. And this is the payment adjustment slide. So 2017, adjust your payment in 2019, either positive or negative 4%. For 2018, that's going to adjust your payment in 2020 and forward. So 4, 5, 7, and 9%. This three times payment adjustment, this is what I like to call the unicorn here on the side of the slide. I don't think we're ever going to see this, but I like to tell people what it is because a lot of people like to talk about it. What this is a budget neutral adjustment factor. So the negative payment adjustments down here fund the positive payment adjustments because all of this has to be budget neutral. So negative payment adjustments fund the positive payment adjustments. So if CMS collects so much money down here with all these negative five payment adjustments that they can't get rid of it by just doing positive five payment adjustments, they have the statutory authority to multiply that times three. I don't know that that will ever happen, but a lot of people like to talk about how high these positive payment adjustments are gonna get. If we see it, we see it, but I wouldn't hold my breath waiting on it. These payment adjustments are going to be made on a sliding scale, positive and negative. So just because you get over the threshold doesn't mean you're going to get a 5. It means you might get a 0.5 or a 1 or a 2. That also doesn't mean you're automatically going to get a negative 5. It means you might get a negative 1 or a negative 2. People that fall into the lowest quartile of MIPS scores will actually get the maximum negative payment adjustment for that year. That is the only people that will actually automatically get the maximum negative is those that are in the lowest quartile. These are all physicians to all physicians. This is not just adjustments for family medicine. This is everyone compared to everyone. Let's see, what else are my other caveats? Oh, year over year, these reset. So if you get a 5 one year and you get a 7 one year, that is not additive. That's a 5 and a 7, which is kind of a bummer if you were getting positive adjustments, but it's really great if you were getting negative adjustments because you don't want those to add together. And I think that's it. Oh, and the exceptional performers, because we had this threshold back here, the 70 exceptional performance. So that exceptional performance threshold is an additional threshold that CMS set. And it's the same for 2017 and 2018. And if you get there, there is an extra pot of money outside of the budget neutral money from 2019 to 2024. $500 million has been set aside for exceptional performers. And they will distribute that money up to a positive 10% additional positive adjustment, depending on how many people fall into the exceptional performance threshold. Update number 8, employed physicians and residents. That's important, especially for this group. So, and really, this is not necessarily an update to the law, it's just an update to the room in general, because I think it's important for people to realize this information, because a lot of people think, this doesn't apply to me, I'm employed or I'm a resident, I really don't need to worry about this program. And you may not need to worry as much about this program as somebody that is a solo, small physician that owns their own practice. But you do need to be informed about this program, and you need to know enough about it to ask the right questions. One of the things you need to know is MIPS adjustments follow you. So let's say you are working in practice A over here, and all of a sudden you decide, I need to move, or I'm not happy, and I want to go over to practice B. That's perfectly fine, but the score you earned over here is going to come with you. So you earn a score here in 2017. You're still going to get that score in 2019 working in this practice. You're not going to just move to the new practice and get their payment adjustment in 2019. You're taking your score with you, and you're getting that adjustment because it's following your NPI. So that score is coming with you. And as you're looking at practices, and if you're looking to move or make a move, they may ask you, what's your MIPS score? What's your payment adjustment going to be in 2 years when you might be working here? The other thing you need to ask is, hey, what's your MIPS score? What kind of situation am I walking into? And it's a way you can evaluate different practices, because if you're trying to choose between practice A and practice B, and one has been getting a good MIPS score and one has not, that might tell you a lot about what kind of practice you're walking into. The other thing you need to think about is, if you are a resident or you teach residents, when you are in your second year of Medicare participation, you are a MIPS eligible clinician. So the second year you bill under your own NPI, seeing Medicare patients, you are a MIPS eligible clinician. So if you moonlight your second year residency, that's your first year of MIPS eligible clinician status, you get your first year exempt, you moonlight your third year of residency, you are now a MIPS eligible clinician. You need to know that. So you are now a third year resident, a MIPS eligible clinician. You moonlight your third year, and you go into practice your first year of practice, you're going to be a MIPS eligible clinician. So your first year of practice, you're not going to be exempt because you have already had 1 year where you have been seeing patients as a moonlighting physician, doing stuff under your own NPI as an independent practice type person. So think about that as you start making moonlighting decisions, and as you counsel your residents about moonlighting, that they will become MIPS eligible clinicians in their second year of seeing patients under their own NPI. We have a lot of resources available for you. We have the employed supplement out on our table out there that has a lot of this information in it. We have a MIPS playbook. We have one for 2017 that will walk you through the program for 2017. We are updating that for 2018 that will walk you through MIPS for 2018. That one is not quite done yet. We hope to have that out in the next couple of weeks so you can hit the ground running in January. You can download it. It's free for AAFP members. You can download it from the website, and you can give it to whoever is administering the program for you. Hopefully it's not you, the physician, unless you have a lot of extra time on your hands. But download that and give it to whoever is administering this program for you. It will walk them through how to get this done. So we have a 2017 playbook. We're going to have a 2018 playbook. I have an article coming out in FPM that is the top 8 for 2018 based on what I just told you, if you want to see some of this in writing. And then we also have a booth where we're going to have staff members over the next couple of days to ask questions and get your questions answered about macro. Oh, and there is a picture of the MIPS playbook. That's the 2017 playbook. And then again, 2018 is coming soon.